Do not get bread because God instituted certain laws of growing wheat or of baking dough. He leaving these laws to run themselves, but God, personally present in the wheat, makes it grow and in the dough turns it into bread. He does not make gravitation or cohesion, but these are phases of his present action. Spirit is the reality. Matter and law are the modes of its expression. So in redemption, it is not by the working of some perfect plan that God saves. He is the immanent God, and all his benefits are but phases of his person and immediate influence. That's page 411 in Strong's 1907 Systematic Theology. Ken and I agree with the psalmist, too. We love Jesus Christ. We love his word. We love his creation. As geologists, we feel privileged and honored to serve him by studying his activity in the ancient earth and learning about his work in the past. We want the church to honor him in the way it uses geological information, too, and that is why we are giving this talk. May 18th, 1980. Our television sets were full of an event which we rarely see in the lower 48 American states, the eruption of a classic pyroclastic composite volcano. Mount St. Helens erupted. Following the eruption, many geological studies of Mount St. Helens furthered our knowledge of this type of volcanism. Unfortunately, studies can also be misused. John Morris recently co-authored a book with Stephen Austin that used Dr. Austin's potassium-argon dating of Mount St. Helens pyroclastic material as, quote, proof that potassium-argon dating methods are suspect and cannot be trusted. The book says no liquid lava flowed out of Mount St. Helens, and any geologist knows that you cannot use potassium-argon dating on pyroclastic rocks that have not been remelted and the mineral dates reset. That doesn't say that in this book, by the way. Doing potassium-argon dating on rocks that have not hardened from a liquid melt will provide preposterous results. And this book concludes on page 67 that you can't use potassium-argon dating because it shows bad methods and proves from this study that the potassium-argon dating is a bad method and thus becomes, in its use of that, what we want to call pseudoscience. Ken and I have visited a number of churches in the Tulsa area where we both live, and the Young Earth Movement uses this study, and the churches we visited did too, and other studies also, as proof that radiometric dating methods cannot be trusted and give preposterous results. Unless pastors know the book's conclusion regarding potassium-argon dating are pseudoscience, that leaving out the remelting position invalidates the conclusions, those pastors don't know any better than to believe it. Ken and I have visited some churches around the area where we live in Tulsa, Oklahoma. These churches invited in speakers who have used this book to prove potassium-argon radiometric dating is unreliable and cannot be used to show that the earth is old. Now, pastors have not necessarily been trained to know that you can't use potassium-argon dating on rocks that have not been liquefied and recrystallized. So they may mistakenly use pseudoscience as factual science because they don't have full disclosure on the part of the experts who they rely. Pastors need to hear from Christian geologists. Merriam-Webster defines pseudoscience as a system of theories, assumptions, and methods erroneously regarded as scientific. American Heritage defines pseudoscience as a system of theories or assertions about the natural world that claim or appear to be scientific, but that in fact are not. For example, astronomy is a science, but astrology is generally viewed as a pseudoscience. An online chemistry curricula that I accessed at random on the web, the Canadian one, I believe, says that a pseudoscience is a belief or process which masquerades as science in an attempt to claim legitimacy, which it would not otherwise be able to achieve on its own terms. It is often known as fringe or alternative science. The most important of its defects is usually the lack of carefully controlled and thoughtfully interpreted experiments which provide the foundation of the natural sciences and which contribute to their advancement. Why should pastors know anything about geology? They're pastors, after all. Well, Joe McDermott, in his paper, What Does Your Preacher Know from American Vision, May 2009, says, I believe that a preacher of the gospel should know something about everything, not be a know-it-all, but know something about it all. He should ably extract knowledge from every area and facet of life and use it in his message in an organic and fluid manner. If he cannot, he can only prove himself drone and drudger, competent to do busy work but not to teach. How does a pastor gain any knowledge at all about geology? He asks his brother or sister Christians in the geologic professions, and he or she trusts the answer. Pastors have to trust their expert sources. Pastors need to hear from Christian geologists. What happens with misuse? Ken and I are very concerned about the use of geological pseudoscience by Christian leadership, both by conservative and by liberal Christian leadership. In this talk, we pick on conservative Christian leadership since we're conservative ourselves. Ken and I want to make sure that we are not giving our talk to dishonor a young earth interpretation of Scripture. God may have made the earth and universe appear old, but our scientific information is misguided since we look in, it may also be misguided since we do look into a glass darkly. And Proverbs 25:2 says, and my message version is the favorite one, it's the glory of God to hide things and the glory of scientists to find them out. We're giving our talk to encourage an open and truthful use of scientific information rather than misusing bits and pieces of scientific information as pseudoscience. During a long email conversation with a staff member in one of the International Campus College organizations regarding different interpretations of Genesis, I was told by the staff member that I could not be a Christian and unless I believed in a young earth position. We ended up having to get management involved to cut off the conversation. At worst, using pseudoscience is an attempt to define God's word at the cost of telling the truth and tying misinformation to an eternal relationship with God. At best, it is used to whet interest in mystery and spurs all an investigation. We all love shows on UFOs, don't we? They're all over. They're fun to watch. I have a friend who recently talked to me. He attends conservative churches. He has his whole life. And he's attended churches that openly push and teach a young earth position. He has been a teacher and leader in the church. He's an engineer and a strongly logical thinking person who wants to know God's truth. Recently, he told me after telling his wife that he was thinking about giving up on Christianity and becoming agnostic. Why? He's discovered that the use of pseudoscience supporting the young earth interpretation of the Bible has just been that, misuse of factual information. He said he no longer knows who to believe and who to rely on. He feels he has believed lies his whole life. We mourn for the youth of our churches who have had to struggle through what to believe and what not to believe. Pastors need to hear from Christian geologists. Ken and I propose a dual approach to reach pastors with geological information. We want to create a series of 11 by 17 inch posters for our coffee table. And Ken, would you mind holding those up? And we want to have these so that we can have quick conversations with pastors because we know their schedules are busy. And we want to create a one-day creation workshop to use in seminaries. And there it comes up on the screen. The standards for these presentations are shown there. We want to provide factually correct information for pastors, and we want to be sensitive to differing theological positions. In the communications, we want to equip pastors to know what is scientific and also what is pseudoscientific regarding geology. We specifically do not want to get into an old earth, young earth discussion with them. We want to give them the facts, and they can decide their own theology. It's pretty obvious where we come from it, but that's not the point of the talk. So here's a copy of the poster presentations with my lovely young daughter, who's going to Moody Bible Institute next year. I'm all excited for her. And Ken going through the poster presentation in our living room. So it'd just be a nice way to have a conversation. And here's an example of what one of those poster presentations might look like. Topics of the presentations. And I'll just run through these. You have them on the handout if you've got a copy of the handout. And then I'll turn the talk over to Ken. By the way, I forgot to put the source of the handout. It's listed at the bottom of the slide here. If you're interested, I can give it to you. It's just a list of topics that show that the earth is old and would be great for discussions. Okay, Ken?
Here you can see a group of $20 bills in the picture. If I collected these $20 bills in my pocket and I went off and started to spend them, fairly soon I would put in jail. Because one of those $20 bills is a counterfeit. Okay? Now, you and I can't tell which one's a counterfeit by looking at it, but I can guarantee if I handed those to a banker and she'd start flipping through them, she'd pick out the counterfeit real, real fast. Okay? It turns out I know it because I borrowed it from a bank, so that's the counterfeit. But it is good. It is really very good. You just don't know until you get there right in the middle and test it. This is the kind of thing that happened really with this book. You know, I was a scientist. I read that statement where he said no liquid lava came out of this volcano, and I knew straight away, and Carol would know straight away, he can't get a credible potassium-argon date. But yet, they went ahead and did the analysis anyway. And that really distresses me and Greg as we watch these kinds of things. He talked about preparing a one-day workshop, and that's our game plan. It's getting into place. And I will start with kinds of things that everybody can understand. And I'm going to show you a couple of those right now. Okay? Number one is tree rings. We all know that tree rings grow and you can see the annual ring. But here's some of the kinds of things that I'd read. In Creation Magazine, December 87, okay? Bristlecone pines, these are very old living trees up to about 4,000 years. The oldest trees that live. It would seem that these trees, if they grew before about 4,000 years, it would take something of a catastrophe and disaster to wipe them out. This is seen as strong evidence for Noah's flood having occurred a little bit more than 4,000 years ago. Well, trees die naturally also. You know, if you'd see a big pile with a flood, yes, maybe, but finding trees out on land lying there do not necessarily lead to a Noah's flood, in my opinion. So examples of trees grow. They get their annual rings, which you've seen. And here's a picture of an example of a tree trunk that grows. And here's a series of short columns that go back in time. And geologists have developed some tools to be able to extend the time window back in the sense that when trees grow, if it's really wet, the bands are wide. If the climate is very, very dry, then the bands are close together. So if I have a living tree that I've checked, and I see a pattern of wet and dry cycles, and I collect a boring of a tree or core into a tree of one that's in the cabin, and I can correlate a component of that log to a component of this that looks the same, I can extend that record back in time. This is an area that geologists call dendrochronology. Well, that has been done, and here is a graph that shows that concept. The green line that I'm showing here is a record of that dendrochronology extending back in time of thousands of tree trunks that have been buried in rivers like the Man River and the Danube River in Europe. And the horizontal axis here is calendar years. Okay? Just counting them as I just described. In addition, the scientists have taken the individual tree rings on that series of trees, and they have also measured radiocarbon. And you've heard of radiocarbon as a dating method for archaeology, okay? The vertical axis here is the record of the radiocarbon ages as applied in that method. Now, if the radiocarbon were exactly the same as the calendar age, then all those points would come right along that horizontal or that diagonal line where my pointer is now. However, it is known that radiocarbon in the atmosphere has changed with time because it's impacted by the influx of solar radiation to the Earth. So therefore, because we have counted these tree rings and we have measured radiocarbon, we have established a calibration line to relate calendar years to the calculated radiocarbon year, which corrects for that unknown when those trees first lived. And that was an answer to the one of the questions you asked, Bill. There's the calibration line, and there's roughly the way it looks. Okay. Number two, ice cores. Young Earth proponents claim that there is one ice age. Okay? Answers in Genesis video that I listened to from their website. Scientists claim that the ice layers were laid down over millions of years. He specifically was talking about Greenland. Here's some example of annual ice layers that have been observed on a peak in Peru, where a scientist from Ohio State University has concentrated his research effort on ice cores on high mountain peaks. And this is a record from that example of that mountain in South America. My horizontal scale here is in years, goes back from 0 to 25,000 years. And I just want you to look a little bit at the curve here at the top, that this particular measure is a proxy for temperature. So this portion of this scale, which is where my pointer is now, is an indicative of a warm period. When that particular proxy measures down here, that's indicative of a cold period. So here we're looking at the end of the last glacial age and the fairly rapid warm-up 11,500 years ago to our current interglacial period that we're in now. That speaker from Answers in Genesis was talking about Greenland ice cores. There is 2 miles of ice stacked up on Greenland, and here is that same kind of record of that proxy, warm temperatures and generally cold temperatures going back, in this example, 60,000 years. I'm going to show a picture now. They're right about 30,000 years plus, and there you can physically see what some of those ice layers look like. And scientists go by and they count these carefully, repeatedly, have different people doing the work, estimate their uncertainty. So there's an example of ice core layering from about 31,500 years ago down in the ice core in Greenland at 6,936 feet deep. Now, when we use those concepts and we go down to Antarctica, the record goes back much longer because the snowfall rate in Antarctica is much, much less. So less snow falls per year. So in this case, my scale now on the horizontal, here is today, zero, and this record goes back about 400,000 years ago, as geologists have done the work down there. And this is the warm period. This is the most recent glacial period, period of glaciers in North America and Europe. So there's one glacial period, there's another glacial period, there's another glacial period, and there's another glacial period. Yet our young Earth brothers say that that is one ice age. Lake sediments that come from a type of deposition that we call varves. And I'm just going to skip over this and show the next one. Varves develop because in the wintertime, we just get some clay and mud that settle to the bottom. In the spring, when things warm up and all the plants and animals begin to live in the surface water, they make their shells of take materials out of the water. They make a shell. It falls to the bottom, and it makes kind of a light layer like that. So these are alternating annual layers, okay? There's an example with about 18 years. Here's an example of successive sections of core that go back about 150 years as I counted them. I have this portion of the slide because notice the scale of the difference of this picture, distance, excuse me. There is 1/16th of an inch, which you well know is something like that, okay? And it has basically 1, 2, 3 years. And notice that scientists have taken laboratory equipment and they physically measure the peaks of particular mineral content sensitively over only 1/16th of an inch. So this is not just using your eyes. This is looking at things at a much finer scale than one you could see with your eye. Now, here was a quote that I read only recently. This was printed by a young Earth creation scientist who's worked in a chemistry laboratory, and he has honors degree in geology from an Australian university, and he writes the following. The flood disrupted carbon reservoirs on the Earth. During the flood, volcanic eruptions blasted carbon dioxide low in carbon-14 into the atmosphere with vast quantities of vegetation that were buried under lots of sediment. Carbon was incorporated into the vast formations of carbonate rocks by the flood. Any geologist will tell you and show you on the Great Barrier Reef or in the Bahamas or in Florida that carbonate rocks are formed in coral reefs. They're not formed by floods. The Mississippi River does not deliver carbonate rocks down to the mouth of the Mississippi River. If you go down to Venice and you watch the material moving and you measure it, it is not carbonate rocks. It's sand and silt and mud. Okay? But this is what this man wrote. Okay? All this carbon. There is the trace of the measure and an indicator of carbon-14 right back through, fairly uniform and consistent through the whole time window when we all think Noah's flood would have occurred. So his statement just does not fit that kind of a fairly regular trend. Doesn't fit the tree rings. The tree ring data that I showed you does not fit the carbon data. Here's a record that's the same style. There you see the green line that came back to 12,000 years of the tree rings. And here's that record continuing now in varves in a lake in Japan that goes over the time period when radiocarbon can be used as a method back to about 45,000 years. So we want to make these posters that Craig talked about. I have the opportunity to be involved in developing a creation workshop. The Lord in the last few years has had me teaching a geology course for non-geologists, and Scott Robertson right here is with at our meeting, is with ExxonMobil, and he said, when are you going to come again to ExxonMobil to teach it? And God seems to have given me a gift of being able to connect with non-geologists. So I thought, well, if I can connect with non-geologists in oil companies, I should be able to connect with pastors. So I'm going to work on geology for pastors is what I'm going to call it. Okay? It'll be a one-day workshop. I will go through these kinds of things you're talking that I just showed as examples that you can understand very easily. And then, of course, I will also have enough time to talk about radiometric dating methods, and I will develop that. And I am convinced, or I am persuaded, that I am determined, there's the word, I am determined to be able to explain radiocarbon and other radiometric dating methods so that non-geologists can understand it and pastors can understand it. My colleague in this effort is Greg Davidson at Old Miss. And he has very recently published a book, When Faith and Science Collide, A Biblical Approach to Evaluating Evolution in the Age of the Earth. Only recently available. I have a few with me, and there'll be some out on the table by the time I sort of get them collected and out of the table, if that should interest you. So please pray for us as we work to challenge some of this pseudoscience material. Help us get into seminaries. That may not be easy. Thankfully, Jack Collins and his colleagues at Covenant Seminary is positive, so we think we will be there sometime this fall. I must thank Greg Bennett, because if he hadn't needled me about 2 months ago, I wouldn't be here today with presenting this. I have to thank my wife, because she's been praying. She's actually the guilty party, because she grew up holding up Henry Morris's The Genesis Flood as the Bible, because Henry was a Christian, therefore should be speaking truthfully. So she's been praying for me for 30 years. She keeps saying, the other side keeps getting all the press because can people like you don't say anything? Well, here I am. I'm finally getting ready. I need to thank Jim Keener. He's a professor at the University of Utah who said we ought to go to seminaries. And, of course, Greg Davidson, he and I just connected nicely at a dinner about 6 months ago and realized we both had the same burden. I also have to thank Roger Weens. He's been an ASA member for many years, good friend of Carol's, and he wrote an article called Joe Christian Needs to Hear from Us, meaning the Affiliation of Christian Geologists, because he said a variety of things like, our conservative friends just don't realize there are people like us that work in geology. And here's the punch. The Christian community is deservedly held up to ridicule by the scientific community for our ignorance. And this is what hinders them to coming to faith. It is a barrier, my dear friends. It is a barrier to faith. Thank you very much. Any questions? 5:36 instead of 5:35. I will stay as long as you want. Anybody that needs to leave, please leave, but feel free to ask questions.
What are the credentials of the people that are there?
That's what's the rub. You wouldn't believe the credentials of these folks. Steve Austin, PhD, Penn State University in coal. Okay? When the faculty, to me, enough said. Enough said. John Morris, PhD from the University of Oklahoma, my state. Geological engineering. Enough said. Yes, please.
I'm surprised at Steve Austin's representation on radiometric dating because didn't he participate in the RATE project?
That's right.
There's an inconsistency.
Oh, big time. Don't get me on the RATE project, please.
Because the RATE project admitted 500 million years of radiometric history.
I know.
That's why he earned the distinction.
I've got to go. I need a business card.
Oh, for sure. We could have held up others.
You'll hear from me.
That's fine.
Yes.
Not senior. Senior died about 6 months ago. Yes, please.
I think the very fact we have graduate geologists who buy into their stuff points out we're doing a really lousy job of instruction of geology students.
Wait a minute. Graduate geology what? Say that again.
Geology job of teaching geology students from geology 101 on about the origin of where this old earth came from as far as our understanding. Back when I was in high school, 55 years ago, I read a book called Giants of Geology by Felton and Felton. Or Fenton and Fenton. And it went over the origin of geologic thinking from the very earliest Greeks and on. Well, for a long time before any radiometric dating came in, which is not until 1909, an ancient Earth was gradually coming into vogue and thinking people, going back at least around 1790, something like that.
Thanks for the book.
But they're allowed to draw the teachers in the background. You need this all of a sudden come like that. It's been evolving over 300 years.
That's true. It's not recent. It's not recent. And there are only about a half a dozen PhD geologists that are doing this.
The very fact you have any quacks at all to do it, point out something's wrong with how we're teaching people.
Wait a minute. Wait. Penn State did their due diligence. He never told them that he was a young earth creationist as he went through the program. And when they found out, they tried to...
He got a PhD at Oregon. He did his undergrad in Penn State, didn't he?
No, his graduate degree was at Penn State.
Oh,
Yes, please.
How do you plan, because there's an issue of trust here. I mean,
that's correct.
Pastors are just naturally trusting others that they hold. But they look at that book and they're like, oh, these are credentialed people. I'm going to trust them. They hold the same kind of views that I have. So
I will come not to try to persuade them that the earth is young. I want to show them the realities of the creation. You know, there's the real solid data of ice cores. But yet, Michael Ord claims there was one ice age. Pastor, you decide. Don't take my word for it. Talk to a number of geology friends. Don't stay inside one small community.
Do I need to be using the mic or not? I want to address something she just said.
Okay.
I mean, that stems from just my pastor's comments to me. And yeah. He's opening up now because we have a trusting relationship. So he's now really interested in learning what science has to say, but it's been years.
One of the things Ken and I have talked about is we've already shut it off.
Okay. Well, then
everybody can leave if they want to.
Well, the business thing started 10 minutes ago, and it really is, I think. Okay.
We said we'd have a break to get this started. Yeah. We never got it.
No,
I'm not complaining. For the, I'm just saying if you've really finished your talk, there have been a couple of questions that people can ask.
Yeah, no, they're all free to leave. I told them that is at 4:35.
They're free to leave. They're compelled to leave. Okay. Here, we need you over in the... Yeah, you're saying they could leave.
If anybody wants my card, I have it here. If anybody wants a copy of this, if you give me a $10 bill, I can give it to you. If you wait out there, it'll be 20. Or it'll be 15, they said.
I have $20 bill. I'll need a change.
I've got some.